Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having seven kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Well, here's good news. Netflix's stock is down 25%. They lost 200,000 subscribers, and they're expecting to lose 2 million in the next quarter.
Not a surprise. There's 1 billion streaming services now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all of them stepped up last year, and they're advertising like crazy, so that's just going to dig into your share.
The CEO is the idiot Reed Hastings, who has spent enormous amounts of money, he and his wife, on George Gascon and Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, I know. I feel bad every time I watch a Netflix show. I really should drop it.
Me too. Maybe a few people quit Netflix because of that.
I also heard that they're losing a lot because of all the password sharing.
Yeah.
And some of the companies are trying to figure out a way to crack down on that because one person buys the membership, right, the subscription, and sure, then shares it with 100 people.
Yeah.
They're all watching it.
Or, yeah, they share it. They share it in families.
Yeah, I did that with my parents. I mean, they're both passed away now, so it's not really a violation anymore. But I did share mine with them for a while.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. You know, I think a lot of people, if they can't share it, they'll say,
like, well, 20 a month or something? I forget how much I pay.
No, they just jacked it up. I think it is close to 20.
Yeah. All right. We're celebrating Freedom from Face Diaper Day. Of course, it all began yesterday with this federal judge's decision, a judge appointed by Donald Trump in the state of Florida, concerning masking on public transportation. And most of the emphasis on the story is over what's going on with the airlines. Let's bring on Alex Stone, ABC News for KFI, to talk about all this.
Well, this has upset a lot of the mask holes in society, the maskaholics.
Well, it has. There are a lot of people who are very angry about it now, but there are also a lot of people who have been celebrating it and cheers on board planes yesterday. But it gets confusing that most airlines, many airports are saying masks are optional now, but it depends on where you go. You land in New York. Newark is mask optional, being in New Jersey, but you go to JFK or LaGuardia, you got to have a mask on. And Philadelphia, their rule went back in yesterday, so you land in Philly, you got to have a mask on. But now it's this debate of, okay, where do you have to wear it? What is local? What is federal? You're going through a TSA checkpoint. They've said they're not going to enforce it, but you're in the terminal or you're at the boarding gate. What do you do? And these folks flying out of Philly today.
I'm so excited. I'm so tired of wearing these things. Yeah. And I can't wait to go home and burn all my masks.
Yeah, there you
see,
go.
Because even when people get into vaccination and stuff, people are still getting sick. Now they're taking the masks away. How safe is that?
But the kind of weird part is that they're telling you in the terminal that you got to have it on when you're not directly next to people. Then when you get on board the plane, they're saying, okay, you can take it off in Philly.
Is that right?
Now you're good. So,
oh, that's because they brought back the indoor mask rule. That's right.
Yeah, in Philly they did, yeah. So, yeah. But yesterday, mid-flight, The announcement comes out. We've got Wi-Fi and live TV on planes. It's not like it used to be. People were going to know immediately. Captains were coming on and saying, hey, just announced you can take off your mask. This was on a United flight.
Masks are no longer required on U.S. domestic flights. Please feel free to keep wearing them if you would like to. But this goes for both employees and passengers. It is now an option.
Flight attendants, they went down the aisles with trash bags, people throwing them in, the flight attendants ripping them off. But there are some very angry passengers today who are saying, look, when they bought their ticket, when they got their boarding pass, that they essentially had to agree to a contract that it said everybody on board has to wear masks. And these are people with young children who have not been vaccinated and young enough that they can't wear a mask. And they're saying this, they should have waited until every plane was on the ground. They had no way to get off.
Oh, no.
They had agreed to the masks, and everybody else had too. And all of a sudden, they're ripping them off, and there was nothing that they could do. This is Sarah Murray flying out of LAX.
We've got a little one here who's too young to be vaccinated, so we're going to be a little bit cautious for now.
Not safe.
And while we are in the airport and on the plane, we're going to be wearing our masks.
Delta Airlines put out a statement a little while ago. I don't have it word for word in front of me, but pretty much was saying, well, you know, we're sorry if anybody was uncomfortable, but we're doing what we can, and safety is our priority. And, what are they going to do?
You got to live life.
One way masking does provide some safety, right?
Little bit, but you remember the whole thing during the pandemic of out, not in, it was what was coming out that was catching everything.
I wouldn't leave the house. I would just, stay behind closed doors.
Yeah, United, about 5 minutes ago, announced that, we just got it from them, they're going to allow some customers who were banned because they had been unruly over masks, they're going to be allowed to return to United.
Oh, good.
So even those who got into a fight that case by case, they're going to review it and maybe allow them back.
That's another thing. I mean, they ended up with thousands of fights on board the plane. Was it really worth imposing that silly rule? When it wasn't particularly effective anyway with the filtering system they have, there was very little risk.
Well, at least that's what the airlines have been saying in the last couple of weeks, of that it created more trouble than it was actually fixing, where we are with the numbers right now. They had been on board with the masks, all of the airlines as a group. But these last couple of weeks, they'd been saying enough that it's creating fights on board. The numbers would indicate it's not needed any longer. And that's why it would seem that the Biden administration now is saying, you know what, whatever. They were going to get rid of it most likely anyway in about a week and a half. Not worth fighting it now. Biden was asked today, should people wear masks on board? And he said, it's up to you. They're not going to.
No appeal.
What's that?
No appeal.
No appeal. The only reason why, and we kept thinking maybe they're going to do it yesterday, and airlines were thinking the same thing, saying we're not bringing down the mask mandates yet. They were waiting on the federal government. They didn't want to allow them to come down, and then the appeal comes in, and the appellate court puts a stay on it, and then they've got to go back up. The only thing that they may appeal on is down the road. The judge saying that the CDC and TSA did not have the authority to do that. That if the White House wants to say, what if there is a really bad variant down the road and they have to bring them back? If they don't have the authority to do that, how would they do it? But for now, at this moment, no, they're not going to do it.
All right, Alex, thank you very much for that report.
You got it. Thanks,
Jesse. Alex Stone, ABC News. I wondered that yesterday during the show. I said, I wonder if the word's going to get to people who are actually on planes right now, and how are they going to react? I did see the video of a whole bunch of people screaming and yelling when the flight attendant, they threw out their masks.
Oh my God, you sit on a plane, for 4 hours, because masks get hot and moist and smelly. It's disgusting.
But I do understand people bought tickets with the impression that masks would be required, and then suddenly they're all ripped off during the flight.
Push the exit door and pull a parachute.
Push the exit door and pull a parachute. Mm-hmm.
That's right. If you're so uncomfortable, there's always
a
way out.
We all do that. We've had enough of a flight.
People whine about the stupidest things. Go watch some Ukrainian war coverage. All right. Good Lord. Yeah, you're sitting next to someone without a mask for 20 minutes. Oh my God, it's so unsafe. It's such a terrible danger. Jesus Christ, stop it.
Well, we'll take a closer look at whether or not masks were effective, particularly when it comes to this country and the pandemic, when we come back.
John and Ken, KFI, KFI, AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, we still have the gas card giveaway to come in the 5 o'clock hour here on the John and Ken Show. That's right, KFI is giving you a chance to win a $100 gas card all day long. You can win with Bill Handel at 9 a.m., Gary and Shannon at 11. We do it in the 5 o'clock hour, and your last chance for the day comes at 7 p.m. with that Tim Conway Jr. guy. John Tierney is a contributing editor of City Journal. He's co-author of a book called The Power of Bad, How the Negativity Affects Rules, how Negativity Affect Rules Us and How We Can Rule It. And the subject in this City Journal article that we're about to read from is, taking a look at certain graphs and making certain comparisons, it doesn't appear that mask mandates did any good. He actually calls it maskaholics.
39 states enforced mandates, 11 states never mandated masks. And it shows that when you average out over the 2 years, that both groups ended up with about the same rate of infection. The cumulative rate was about 24% in the mandated states and 24% or so in the non-mandated states.
Yeah, the graph is uncanny. There's one line showing, and it's the one's indicated by black, which is states that apparently, is it the mandate or the no mandate? I can't even tell from this. But both lines follow almost a similar pattern through the years. It goes back to 2020 and takes us into early 2022. And you can see that the states with the mask mandate versus the states without the mask mandate, the up and downs are almost identical in terms of cases.
Right. And you know that in the mask mandate states, I mean, a lot of states, there's a very high compliance rate. Some states did not have a high compliance rate. It didn't matter. You ended up at 24%. Also, the cumulative rate of COVID deaths were virtually identical, too. In fact, there were slightly more deaths per capita in the states with the mask mandate.
Yeah.
And there's a book out by Ian Miller, a data analyst who created these graphs that Ken and I have been looking at. He's got a book called Unmasked: The Global Failure of COVID Mask Mandates, and the book documents how mask mandates are implemented without scientific justification, how they failed around the world, and how public officials and journalists have kept making fools of themselves by pretending otherwise.
And listen to this. In their pre-COVID planning strategies for the pandemic, neither the CDC nor the WHO, World Health Organization, recommended masking. Randomized clinical trials involving flu viruses that had shown, contrary to popular wisdom in Japan and other Asian countries, that there was no evidence that face masks are effective in reducing transmission. The WHO actually put that in some scientific literature. The pandemic planners at the United Kingdom's Department of Health had reached a similar conclusion. In line with the scientific evidence, the government will not stockpile face masks for general use in the community. And as you know, early on, Dr. Fauci was not a big fan of the masks. I'm talking about the first month this story started to break back in 2020. But apparently media hysteria and political expedience convinced Fauci, the CDC, and the WHO to say, all right, wear the mask.
Because mandating masks gave the illusion that you're doing something.
It does. I thought, well, common sense told me, though, if you can block some of your viral load, you may not infect others. Doesn't that still hold?
But the viral load was 15 minutes if you were within 6 feet of somebody who was actively infected.
That's how you get infected.
Right. So right. Walking through a grocery store, passing people for a few seconds was never going to...
Oh, yeah, that was silly.
It was never going to have any effect.
But I meant
effect.
Like on the plane, if let's say that the air filtration system wasn't great 2 years ago, and you're sitting next to someone for 5 hours on a flight.
Yeah, that's a more plausible reason to wear a mask, yeah.
Right.
It had to do with what the air filtration was. Like, they had the three C's, and I forgot what the three C's for you. Like, stay out of crowds, stay out of confined areas, and something else similar. And it was like common sense that you probably would use in a lot of cases in life, right? Most
yes.
people don't want to be in crowds. You don't want to be stuck in a confined area. Oh, and C was, like, close together.
And I'll add an S to that. A super spreader comes on the scene. I really believe that a lot of what propelled this virus in certain places and big outbreaks was just a super spreader situation. Whether or not it's somebody that just had a huge viral load or something like that. There was just something, some sort of hysteria was associated with this in terms of the virus sometimes. That's why you found like a bunch of people that went to a convention all got COVID.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing, and this is where the media as a whole is so wildly hysterical and dishonest. Once it became a political symbol or religious symbol, the wearing of the mask, it means I believe science. It means I am against Donald Trump and all the rest of that stuff. Then all the left-wing progressive woke hacks in the media started pushing that propaganda. And John Tierney calls it magical thinking. Magical thinking is another term for delusion. The way the virus worked is it rose and subsided in different areas of the country at different times.
Mask or no mask.
So if you had a rise in a non-mask area like the South, it's like, well, see, those governors want to kill their residents.
That's what the media did. They cherry picked. And then when the rates went down, and we know there was some surges in the Northeast last winter. There's a story about Rhode Island. They got praised by Politico. A survey in the autumn of 2020 found 96% of Rhode Islanders were wearing masks. But then the state went on during the winter to suffer one of the nation's worst COVID surges.
Yeah, they called it the wear your damn mask policy in Rhode Island. And it looked like a big winner. How the smallest state engineered a COVID comeback because they had a quiet summer. And then the virus came roaring back in the winter with the same mask mandate and the same percentage of people obeying. It didn't matter. The masked states did not win, and the unmasked did not lose. It just depended on the time of year. This virus ran in waves throughout geographical areas.
And then, of course, two states that gave up on masks early, Florida and Iowa, apparently did better than the national average in measures of COVID mortality, as well as what they call the overall excess mortality.
Oh, but the Washington Post described...
the number of deaths more than normal from all causes, which I believe is a very important number. Because, you know, someone pointed this out to me again in an email the other day. Just because somebody had COVID upon death doesn't mean they died of COVID.
No. And, by the way, all the people who died in 2020... would be dead by now anyway. And most
all
of the
people.
Well, I'm sorry. No. I made a mistake. In nursing homes.
Oh, the elderly people, yeah. Right.
The elderly people in nursing homes would have been dead anyway.
Conditions.
Same thing for most of the people in nursing homes in 2021. They would have checked out by now.
Right.
That's why they look at excess deaths. How many extra deaths did you have outside the normal average? Washington Post had an article about Iowa called Welcome to Iowa, a state that doesn't care if you live or die. They were wrong. They called Iowa's policy reckless and delusional. Iowa's COVID death toll plummeted right after the article appeared.
And then he ends up comparing Germany and Sweden. Germany, there was a lot of compliance. 80% wore masks. Only 10% of Swedes, on average, bothered to wear masks during the pandemic. And you look at the chart again, not a big difference in COVID cases or mortality.
Internationally, USA Today had a headline, Czech Republic has life-saving COVID-19 lesson for America. Wear a face mask. But since then, the Czech death toll has been one of the world's highest. Thailand, Japan, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Philippines, Uruguay, Chile, Poland, Hungary were all hailed as models of scientific enlightenment for their low infection rates and strict mask policies until, as usual, the masks suddenly lost their magical power.
In fact, he points out there's Japanese therapists who treat people that are maskaholics. They are mask dependent. Mm-hmm. They're paranoid. They won't take them off anywhere.
Yeah, that I thought was funny because you always get people go, well, you know, in Japan, they wear masks all the time. It's like, yeah, it looks like they have a lot of therapists in Japan who are dealing with maskaholic issues.
Yeah, well, I mean, Asian countries have been credited for, you know, starting the whole thing with masks because they had a lot of those, yeah. Like the bird flu outbreak and
yeah.
Such.
I don't know if the credit is the proper word. I think at some point it becomes a mental disorder if, you know, you're always wearing a mask. I mean, we survived, you know, hundreds of thousands of years without wearing masks. You have an immune system that covers most things. Once in 100 years, you get something that the immune system can't handle entirely for a while. But mostly the people who died were the very old. And I mean the very old. Or those who had, four comorbidities, which means they had a lot of bad life habits.
All right. 6 weeks ago, our dopey governor, Gavin Newsom, announced a new plan to deal with homelessness. Now we know who's attacking it. Even if it doesn't work, even if it's just Newsom spouting something once again that doesn't actually become a reality, you're going to find out next the groups that are already objecting to this idea of the care court. We'll talk about it next.
John and Ken, KFI, DFI.
I'm busy burning my mask. Get away.
KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
No, I want to be environmentally correct. I'll just mask stomp.
It's no face diaper day.
Well, maybe I'll dissolve them.
Yeah. I mean, there should be mass public destructions. Mass public destructions of masks.
I think they got the finger in the wind. The Biden administration is trying to figure out whether or not to challenge this. Yeah. Supposedly 60% of Democrats still believe in masks.
Okay.
But that's their voters, so.
Yeah, but who are they going to vote for?
But I think that's soft. I call that soft. What I think a lot of them are, they're looking for the government and the experts to tell me what to do. And if a judge says no, and then the CDC doesn't challenge it, maybe that's good enough for them.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I think that's kind of how it works.
I'm waiting for the experts. What are the experts saying? But they don't listen to the experts half the time. More than half the time, they don't listen to them. The expert said, send your kids back to school. Well, I don't know. I don't know. I follow the science.
Well, that's a percentage of the Democrats, but I think there is a significant percentage that also will just go with the tide. And now that the mask thing is gone, they're probably like, ah. Like,
people have the right to embrace a totalitarian government, but I'm not joining that party.
No, you want to wear your face diaper, it's fine.
Go ahead.
It's a free country.
That's right. And we're going to make you feel self-conscious about it.
6 weeks ago, Governor Newsom made another one of his big announcements about homelessness. Besides spending billions more, he set up something called, at least it's a bill that's being proposed in Sacramento, Care Court. Community Assistance Recovery and Empowerment Court.
Empowerment.
Empowerment Court.
That's when you know it's a load of horse crap.
So family members, healthcare providers, first responders could petition a civil judge to initiate a plan for eligible individuals who lack medical decision-making capacity. To kind of boil that down, basically the bum you see on the corner who's out of his mind, doesn't know what's going on in the world, doesn't care, leave me alone, can be, under the circumstances, taken into custody and given care.
The drug addicts and crazy people. People whose brains no longer work.
They claim this would focus on the most vulnerable Californians who have mental health conditions like schizophrenia or people that have cycled in and out of hospitals and jails.
Now, think about this, right? Because we see
now
this.
Now, it does say the program would be voluntary, but is it really if you have the family member or some healthcare provider saying this person needs the care court? I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't flow.
You're right. It does not make sense.
Because it's not voluntary if you've got somebody else directing.
If it's completely voluntary, then this program's useless, which is why I suspected it from the beginning. But we're finding out
because it says here the family members or other people could petition a civil judge.
Yeah, and that to me means that you, the individual who's under the petition, you don't have a choice if the judge decides you need care and you need to get it now.
Or is it they're going to offer it to the person and they've got
who
the
could
right
still
to turn
say
it
no
down.
And go back in the tent?
Sounds like there's an escape hatch in here somewhere.
Yeah, this is why I don't trust Newsom. However, they didn't even get a hearing on this. He wants it in place by July 1. We don't know if it'll do any good. But it's worth talking about this because several groups, of course, the ACLU, something called the Disability Rights California, and the Western Center on Law and Poverty are opposing this vehemently. They're calling it coercive.
Yeah. Should be coercive.
And it should be coercive. I think that's the only way it's going
to
work.
Exactly, you're exactly right. I mean, there has to be coercion for people who are so compromised. Their brain doesn't work. The drugs have destroyed their willpower. Well, you have to do something about that. Otherwise, they're dying in the streets. And I'm not going to pretend to care about every person dying in the streets, but not on our streets here. You go out to the desert and crawl under a rock and die if that's what you want to do. But you can't die on the streets. You can't terrorize people. You can't expose yourself and walk around, you know, vomiting and injecting drugs and masturbating and passing out and smashing
sounds
windshields.
Sounds like a fun day.
Yeah.
Cynthia Castillo, who's a policy advocate, that means a lobbyist, for the Western Center on Law and Poverty. And by the way, apparently these groups have a lot of influence on the Democrats in Sacramento. So this bill could be dead on arrival if they stand in the road and block it.
And they're bribed.
She said, and this is important, we vehemently oppose the proposal because it has this coercive court process implemented and no right to housing. In fact, what they're upset with is the fact that it prioritizes treatment over housing.
Yes.
Think about this. See, this is the crowd that we've been talking about for years now. They think it's just a housing problem. Yeah. It's not mental illness or addictions.
You know what? They have a sick ideology that I'm not even going to try to understand. That makes zero sense. There's not an argument for that. They need mental health treatment. They need addiction treatment. The arguing over the parameters of a house sounds really, really stupid. These people can't run a household. But what the F? I mean, it makes no sense. You know, you end up arguing with these people too long for too many years, and you start losing your mind. There's nothing here to argue about. No, that doesn't work. Wrong. Get out. Shut up. Go away. You're ruining life for everybody.
Although she does make the point, which could in the long run be true, the plan seems to be expanding the bureaucracy of homelessness services, what we refer to as the homelessness industrial complex. She could be right on that point. This could be another one of Newsom's ridiculous, I want to make a big grand gesture speech, and then we actually see the money spent. It is just more bureaucracy and less problems fixing the homeless problem.
Well, if you hire like the bureaucrat mentality, when I have encountered bureaucrats for anything, they're really kind of dull, lifeless people. They're not dynamic thinkers. So if you get 1,000 of them together in one agency or 150 of them, what are you going to get? You're going to get that mediocrity multiplied by 150. You're not going to get decision makers. You're going to get buck passers. You're going to get people who layer on all kinds of rules and regulations so they can't be blamed. They're not responsible. You have to go to some other department. It's somebody else's job. That's what they do. Because none of these people want responsibility. They're kind of like homeless people in that way. Bureaucrats are similar. They don't want the responsibility of their decisions, of their policy, of being judged as to whether their policies work or not.
Andrew Imparato, executive director of Disability Rights California, said we're open to changing the way this works. If they start listening to us and take coercive approaches and court-ordered approaches off the table, I think there's hope. If they do that, then this thing is worthless.
No. If the drug addict, schizophrenic, is not ordered by a judge to be put inside somewhere, then he's never going to go. It's been we tried this way. We've tried this way for the last 10 years.
This is what all the what are they called? The outreach workers do all day long.
No.
They talk to the homeless. Can we do anything for you? Can we get you some? Nah. All right, and they walk away.
Here's the answer to all
and
these.
We spend money on them doing this.
The answer to all these progressive F-heads, these woke holes, is we tried it your way for 10 years. Massive failure. You had your turn. You struck out. Over and over and over again, okay? You're being demoted to the minors.
Right.
This is not a major league quality ideology you have here. Does not work. Does not work. End of discussion. No further debate. Get the hell out.
Yeah, this idea that we just leave homeless people on the street to figure it out and they'll come to their senses and they'll come for services and treatment is BS. It's not going to happen. It's made the problem 100 times worse.
Yeah, just got to keep telling them, sorry, you had your big try. Went on for years, didn't work. It means your ideas suck.
All right. When we come back on this same subject, we're going to talk about Malibu. Malibu, yes, that Malibu. It has homeless people, not a lot of them, but apparently they voted to come up with a plan. And it's controversial, but I think it's a good one. Next.
John and Ken, KFI, coming up at 4 o'clock. We're going to talk to James Bozagian, who's a council member for Calabasas.
Yeah, apparently George Gascon wanted to come before the Calabasas City Council and discuss his vision for the DA's office, and they're turning him down.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear from him. You'll hear the reason why. It's dealing with a man by the name of Jeffrey Cooper, who has quite the list of sex charges against him involving a child 10 years or under. And it looks like this case has just languished at the DA's office because it's not gone to court. He's wandering free.
He's wandering free. When you hear what he's done, and they've had 62 hearings in court in 4 years, and the case still hasn't gone anywhere. So Bozagian,
he can get 39 years to life in state prison with the charges.
shouldn't he be in jail until his trial?
Could attack another child, right? Doesn't make any sense.
No, but this is Gascon's world, and Gascon wants to meet with Calabasas City Council, and they're telling him to go stuff it.
This might be another guy who's going to tattoo Gascon's name on his face.
Yeah.
This Cooper guy.
These crimes are committed in the name of George Gascon.
But talking about the vagrant problem, this story out of Malibu is absolutely fascinating. Of course, the version we're getting is coming from public radio. Malibu wants to shelter its unhoused somewhere else. Can they do that? Starts by talking about a vagrant by the name of Aaron Marshall, who started camping near the Malibu Library. He walked 14 miles from Venice Beach looking for safety.
Right. Now that's Malibu's problem. This jackass.
He found Malibu peaceful compared to the chaos of L.A. Anyway, here's what happened and why we're talking about this. We tried to get somebody on from Malibu because this is fantastic, and it meets what so many listeners have sent us in emails over the years. I can't even count them. The Malibu City Council recently voted unanimously in favor of a plan to reserve shelter beds somewhere outside the city limits and offer the unhoused transportation to that location. The next part is where I'm talking about the listeners. It's from an attorney and, wow, be described as this, an unhoused advocate by the name of Gary Blassie. Gary said, if Malibu can get away with this, why can't cities band together and build a massive camp in the desert?
Yeah.
He writes, there's empty land around Manzanar. I don't know where that is.
Manzanar is one
in
of
the Owens Valley.
I've driven by that. It's one of the sites where Japanese Americans were incarcerated during World War II.
That's why he cited it, because he's trying to compare it to incarcerating people during World War II.
It's always over the top, stupid rhetoric. Like, no, it's not in internment camps. They're not going to be forced there. They're simply not going to be allowed to live on the streets of Malibu. You want homeless people in the Malibu Hills? Malibu will burn down.
They've already had some problems.
They have a fire there every 3 years. They had two homeless fires in Pacific Palisades right next door just last year.
That's the one that is the Bonin fire.
Bonin fire, yeah.
There were several Bonin fires, but that was
there were two specific Bonin fires across the street from the Will Rogers State Beach homeless village that he wanted to build.
Bonin
fire.
And then the next quote is also just a keeper. It's Sheila Kuehl, the LA County supervisor, who said, this is a flagrant abnegation of the city's responsibility to all its residents. So suddenly now this guy, what's his name? Aaron Marshall is a resident.
The guy
that came camping from Venice.
And by the way, I don't think he originated in Venice. I bet you he came from out of state.
Oh, probably.
All right. Yeah. So he comes from somewhere out there, shows up in Venice. Venice is a little too nuts for him. He walks 14 miles, and now Malibu is what? Obligated to find him a house?
Yeah.
Like really?
You just show up and squat for a while. You're obligated to get a house.
Sheila Kuehler, this is an abnegation. Like, you know what that word means. Somebody wrote that for her.
Whistling through her teeth, the old crow.
Yeah.
Malibu only has a small but growing fraction of the more than 66,000 people estimated to be experiencing homelessness throughout LA County on any given night. This is, of course, coming from public radio. That's why I enjoy the way it's written.
But did you see this awful philosophy from the Santa Monica mayor, Sue Himmelrich? And we have had business people on from Santa Monica, and she is just a stubborn fool. She says that the idea that a city providing this kind of assistance could draw more homeless to the area is a risk that I am personally willing to take.
Oh, my God.
The people who come here incrementally to get our services, if they'll take a roof over their heads, I'm happy to house them. If each of us took responsibility for the people in our jurisdiction, I think it would be a lot easier for all of us to have a comprehensive approach.
Oh, dear God.
You hear that?
How is this woman not recalled?
You people in Santa Monica, your idiot mayor just invited the entire world to come and get free housing from her.
Looks like she's decided that if you're in Santa Monica, we're going to find you a place to live. And again, a lot of times now, as we've learned this year, it's not about a tent or a shelter. They're going to build you permanent supportive housing.
Yeah.
They're going to spend the hundreds of thousands of dollars to build you a nice apartment, and you'll have all sorts of counselors nearby and maybe a gym, and this is what they want to do. Because they believe this cures everything.
So Calabasas has this deal, an agreement with a facility in Van Nuys. There's one bed open 24 hours a day for any homeless person that gets shipped from Calabasas. They have an average of two homeless people a night.
Well, that's a good one, too.
So one of the two gets a bed in Van Nuys.
Isn't that funny that we're having a Calabasas city council member on?
Yeah, we got to ask him about that.
But that's we're going to talk to him about Gascon. All right, when we return, we will be at the George Gascon recall desk to talk to a Calabasas city council member. He has rejected the idea that DA George Gascon will come and explain his vision to the Calabasas City Council. And you'll find out why. There's a lot of reasons. Crime is up there, but they have one particular example of a man who's been charged with some horrible crimes that is still wandering the streets. That's next.
John and Ken Show, Deborah Mark has the news, KFI AM 640.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.